Welcome to another episode of Unscripted. I am Zanetta Chunik Empower, and today I have my most highly anticipated guest of the day, Luke Mickelson. Hello, hello, hello.
How you doing?
I am doing awesome. So glad to have you on. And I'd love for my guests to introduce themselves. So can you tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
You bet. And if the audience had any idea how you and I struggled to get this interview on record, it's good that we're here finally. No, thanks for having me on. You know, I tell everybody, listen, I'm just a farm kid from Idaho. And I stumbled upon something that really came to be my passion and purpose. But you know, a little bit about me being from a small town in Idaho. You know, I tell people, listen, the best thing about being living in a small town is the worst thing about it too, which is, you know, everybody and they all know you too, right? Way more than we should. But you know, the benefits of that is you get to know and you get to learn how to support one another, and you just have, because you know everybody, right? You make sure you pull over if someone's on the side of the road, and you're always lending a hand. And that really, I think, shaped my personality into what it is, which is what led me to creating Sleep in Heaven with Peace.
Yes. So you mentioned passion. I heard about that, stumbling upon finding your passion. Did you stumble upon it, or was it just your time?
Great question. You know, it depends on how you view it. For me anyways, you know, this all happened 14 years ago in 2012. And me personally, you know, I was around 35 years old. I had a good job. I had a family. I was coaching. You know, I was serving in my church. And Zanette, I tell everybody, listen, on paper, I had a perfect life, right? I didn't have anything to complain about. But internally, right, I would think I was at that age, and certainly at that realization of my age, of, you know, what is important in life? Like, what do I measure success by? Mm-hmm. And when you start finally asking yourself those deep questions and really analyzing what you really think, and, you know, almost being honest with yourself, you know, I realized, you know, the amount of money I made, I didn't care about that. I didn't really care about where I lived or what kind of car I drove. What I cared about, and what filled my soul was service. I don't know why. I just liked doing that. And I liked being with people and rubbing shoulders with them. And it's just how I was, how I've always been. I was an outside salesman, if that shocks anybody. You know, I loved talking with people. But when you're sitting in the middle of this kind of internal reflection, this trying to find yourself, I was going through a big faith crisis, going through almost like an identity crisis. It's not a fun place to be in, especially when you think you know where you're supposed to be and you think you're doing everything right, but you still feel these feelings. And I know now, I didn't know then, that it was just the absence of a passion and purpose, right? And in the middle of this, right, I was serving in my church in a position called a young men's president, which is kind of like a youth pastor, if you will. But I loved working with the youth, right? But I served the boys. I was this young men's present position. I helped the boys ages 12 to 17 or so with their spiritual growth, but more the activities that we did during the week, which was basically Boy Scouts back then. So I was like the leader of the Boy Scouts. And so a part of this position, I would sit in meetings with other leaders of the church, and we'd talk about things that we were doing, events in the community, people that we were helping in the congregation. Well, one family came up and it kind of caught my ear because, listen, being from a small town of 4,000 people, you know, I've been riding my bike since I was 5 years old. I know every inch of this town. At least I thought I did, right? And here I was, you know, 25 years into this town, well, longer than that, 29 years in this town. They talked about an apartment complex I didn't even know existed. So that was kind of the first, wait a minute, where is this place at, you know? And then they start talking about a leader that showed up at the house, started talking about the things that they needed, right? The mom was the local school bus driver, and she needed rides to school, or rides to work, rather. The father was suffered from mental health, so he couldn't hold a job really well. They were just struggling on hard times. They had a bunch of kids, and the kids didn't have any beds, and they needed food, and they needed some clothing. And I just said, wait, did you just say the kids didn't have any beds? Like, what do you mean? Like, they've got a mattress, right? And the leader said, no, they're just sleeping on the floor, hardwood floor with some blankets and a pillow. And I don't know, it just hit me really hard, right? I start thinking about my own kids. I had three at the time, and just the image of them on the floor, knowing what kind of, sleep they had that night. It was hard to think about. I'd never really thought about a kid not having a bed. I mean, every kid's got a bed, right? And then I thought about my Boy Scouts, and a light turned on, and I was like, here's an opportunity that I could get an Xbox controller out of these boys' hands and put a drill and a sander in it, work, you know, and teach them a skill. I knew my way around tools. I'd never built furniture before, but, you know, I think we could figure it out. And so I went home that night really excited to my daughter had a bunk bed, to measure and kind of come up with a plan on how to build this bed. And sure enough, we did. And the boys came over that week and we built this bunk bed. And then the time came to deliver it. Well, the word kind of got out to the congregation and the families and whatnot that we were doing this. Well,
Luke, the next thing I know, there was... y'all. Luke is making beds and furniture. You're right now.
Well, all of a sudden, there was like 20, 30 people at my house, and they wanted to be part of this delivery, which I thought was really cool, you know. But I also was like, guys, we can't send an army over this two-bedroom apartment, right?
Yeah.
And so me and a bunch of leaders stayed back while the boys and some of their parents went. And the next day at church, they just told me how amazing the experience was, you know, how happy the kids were, how grateful the parents were. And I was happy for them, don't get me wrong, but I was a little jealous too. I missed out on this. Well, the next week came about and, you know, the project was done, right? You know, we had solved the problem and it's just kind of funny how life just creeps itself back in and you kind of fall in the same rut. You know, I had just experienced this amazing project and now I'm right back into this faith identity crisis, trying to pep talk myself out of it and just wasn't doing a good job. Well, we were watching a program. I was sitting on my couch watching a program with my kids and all of a sudden a commercial came on and it was some Xbox or Xbox game. Anyways, it was a toy that my kids wanted. And being the fact that it was just the start of December, Christmas was right around the corner, of course they asked if they could have it. You know, can we get this for Christmas? And it was just one of those things where it just hit me funny, right? Here I was struggling, trying to get out of this rut. No one knew about it, just all internal, right? And then I build and deliver a bed to a child, which was awesome. And now my kids want this game that we, you know, they know I'm not going to buy for them. They should appreciate the things that they have. They've got a bed. These kids did. I mean, all this thing was just going in my head, right? Well, the next thing you know, I just stood up and walked to the garage. And my kids are like, Dad, our show's on. Where are you going? And I said, you know what? I got leftover wood. I'm going to build another bunk bed. And you're going to come with me. And so that's what we did. We went out there and I got my seven-year-old daughter and her tutu hammering away, and my son in his Boise State jersey drilling some wood together. It was a lot of fun. You know, we had a lot of fun because I wanted my kids to know the joy of service and what comes from that, right? As well as appreciate the things ahead. They had a bed, for crying out loud, right? Mm-hmm. And so we built a bed in my garage, just the three of us.
That's wonderful. Bringing the kids into the things that we find joy in multiplies that same joy. So I'm glad that you had that experience. How has these initial moments grown into what you've built so far? So you said this was 14 years ago. So not only do you have bigger children now, but this venture has certainly expanded as well. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the ironic thing is I didn't build a bed because I knew a child was sleeping on the floor. You know, I thought we had solved the problem. I didn't know child bedlessness was a real thing. And so here I finished this bunk bed with my kids. I had no idea what to do with it, right? It was more about the experience with my kids But we had this bunk bed, and so my wife at the time recommended that I throw it on one of these buy sell trade Facebook groups, you know. And so I said, sure, why not? So I threw it out there and made this little post that's like, you know, hey, me and my kids made a bunk bed for someone in the community. We want to give it to a child that doesn't have one. You know, I'm not the greatest craftsman in the world, but I think it's a good bed. And I just to think of a kid sleeping on the floor when Santa comes, it's too hard to think about, right? Especially when we knew how to solve it. Well, the cool thing happened. Two things happened that I did not expect. I started getting people commenting on this post that I not only had never met before, and you got to remember, this is back, I didn't know what buy, sell, trade was. I'd never used it before. So to have strangers comment on my post was really odd to me. And then all of a sudden, and friends that I hadn't talked to for 20 years were commenting. And the second crazy thing is all of them knew of a child that was sleeping on the floor or multiple kids. And then they told me about the conditions, right? These kids sleeping on pallets, on hard concrete floors, you know, three or four kids to one bed. And it was just really shocking to me. I'd never heard of that before. And so I got pretty excited to find the one that I really wanted this delivery with my kids, or this bed that my kids and I made to be a special one, you know? Well, I had a friend of mine call. She said, she says, Luke, have you, delivered that bed yet? I said, no, actually I haven't. And she says, well, I want to tell you about a family I'm helping that's coming out of homelessness. I found a house for them because she worked in the social services area. And this is my Haley story. So Haley was a six-year-old girl that had never slept on a bed before. She only slept in the backseat of her mom's car. That's the only bed that she knew. And of course, they just got this house, so I was really excited to deliver this bed to a six-year-old that never had one before. And so when we walked into the house, you know, I loaded up the bunk bed and drove. It was about 30 minutes away, and then got to the house. And you know, I've seen poverty before. I've seen homelessness and these situations before, but I never really went into this situation looking it through the eyes of a six-year-old, you know? And you think things differently. You know, you walk in, and when there's nothing in the house, right? And there was nothing in the house. You start thinking, well, there's no couch or TV to watch cartoons. You know, there's no table or chair to eat your Lucky Charms at in the morning. You know, all the kid things that you think of, you know. And it was pretty shocking, you know, to think that there's a family and these kids live in this condition. And then, and little Haley was so excited to see us, right? She wanted to, you know, she had a howl crying out loud. And so I said, well, Haley, why don't you show me your bedroom? You know, where do you sleep? And she didn't know why we were there. But she was so excited. I don't know why. We were strange dudes, and she she was just this cute little girl. Well, she takes us back in her room, and you could imagine what that looked like, right? There was holes in the carpet and tears in the wallpaper. I mean, it was a rough room. But the hardest thing for me to see in that room had nothing to do with the structure. It had to do with the pile of clothes that were sitting in the corner, and that's where Haley slept. She'd come home from school, she'd put her PJs on, sleep on her school clothes, you know, shirt for pillow and, you know, pants for blankets. And then she'd put those same pants and shirt on and go to school the next day, you know. And I almost got mad. Like I was kind of upset, frustrated that this was going on in my own hometown, right? I'd never seen it before, never heard of it, let alone seen it. But then I got pretty excited because we were delivering her first bed, and we started bringing in the pieces and putting it together. And I was kind of watching little Haley to see how she would react once she realized what it was. And sure enough, she just erupted. You know, she came over and hugged these two strange dudes in her house, you know. And then she did something I'd never seen before, and I'll never forget it. She went over and hugged the bed, and then she kissed the bed. I'd never seen a child so happy for a bed that she kissed it, you know. And if that wasn't enough, Zanetta, to melt your heart, you look up, and here's a single mom, right? And I was raised by a single mom too. And there were 6 years of tears just pouring down this lady's face. And And I knew each one of those tears, what they meant. I saw my mom and saw her cry about it, and the frustrations and the guilt and the worry and all these things that single parents deal with. You could see just starting to melt away with every tear. And right then, I mean, I just about lost it. This, you know, I'm trying to be this big, strong Idaho tough farm kid, right? And I'm about to bawl my head out, right? And I knew right then and there, I said, this is way more than just a bed, right? This is way more than just a good night's sleep for a child.
That's a really great story to really share the impact of this work and how it affects others in a residual way. Like, having a good night's sleep is not underrated. It affects your performance. It allows you to regenerate. It helps you get what you need to show up better the next day. So for young minds, having that sanctuary, if you will, in a sleeping environment is very key.
Well, you know, when you think about it, and I tell everybody, listen, right now, if you're listening to this podcast, just put your book down or stop for just a second, right? Put your phone down and take 60 seconds and think about what would it be like as a six-year-old to not have a bed, or any six-year-old, right? You know, let's talk about just the physical toll, right? They wake up, they didn't sleep well, they're tired, they're probably sore for being on a hard ground or uncomfortable, uneven clothes, right? They go to school, they're not ready to learn, so their grades suffer. They're in a bad mood because they woke up on the wrong side of whatever they woke up on the wrong side of, right? And you know, they don't make very good friends. And that's just the physical side. Then you talk about the emotional and the mental side of things. These kids can't have sleepovers. They don't have a bed, right? They don't want their friends to come into their house and see where they live or where they sleep. So they go to their friend's house, and their friend not only has a bed, but they've got freaking throw pillows, right? You know, what kind of message does that child receive and think about, and how she, you know, she felt, maybe she felt unloved or you know, something was wrong with her, you know, that, and then worst of all, right, when you and I, when we have a bad day at work, or, you know, have a fight with our spouse or our kids, or worse yet, we get the flu, right? Where on the one place on the planet do we just can't wait to crawl into and just go away, right? Just disconnect from the world. That's our bed. You know, I travel all the country speaking, some really nice conference places and hotels. I still have not found a bed I'd rather sleep in than my own. And it has nothing to do with comfort. It has everything to do with safety, security, my sanctuary, you know. And these kids don't have that. And it's just terrible. It's so hard on them. And I don't think you realize, I didn't until I saw little Haley's reaction, and then I saw the mom, and I was like, this is more than just a good night's sleep for a child, right? This brings families together. This solves so many problems that I don't think we really realize.
I think child poverty is a taboo topic, especially when we speak on social services. Things that are accessible to single parents. Being underemployed is also a thing, and no one's having that conversation enough, especially with the sentiment that children are resilient. So children are placed in unfortunate scenarios that they don't have control over. So little Haley doesn't know the difference. And sometimes that it's fine because she doesn't know better. But there's a level of gratitude that children always have for what's in front of them. But how powerful is it to show them more? So I'm very inspired by you continuing to have that conversation. And how, as you have the conversation as a speaker, what has been the response at your speaking engagements and over time as you illuminate some of the tribulations of child poverty and bedlessness?
It's a great question. You know, it's pretty standard. People don't know, and that's why I'm on your podcast today. People don't know that child bedlessness is a real problem. I didn't know. And, you know, let me tell you how I know it's still a major unknown problem. You know, we're the largest bed building charity in the world. Think about that. And the reason why is because there's not very many. You know, when I first started this and said, okay, we need to not be just a family Christmas project. We need to actually be a charity. I started sharing more of delivering beds and showing pictures on my Facebook page. And all of a sudden, we got more stories of more kids that were in trouble and needed help. And it just started compounding. Then I got more friends that wanted to be a part of it. They wanted to start a chapter. You know, now we've trained 440 plus chapter presidents in almost every state and in four countries. We've built almost 400,000 beds just since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, as you and I speak, there is 160,000 plus kids on our waiting list. Mm. And we only cover about 28% of the United States geographically.
Okay.
And so there's 70% that still don't even know where we exist. They don't know that there's a solution to this problem. You know, I learned that was shocking to me. And probably the biggest shocker to me was, you know, back in the day, you know, when I started all this and started delivering beds and sharing, I'd get called from CASA, from Child Protective Services, from transitioning homelessness, you know, service programs. I was like their favorite guy. Right. And I didn't know why until someone says, Luke, you don't realize. Sorry.
Take your time.
Providing a bed for a child, for these agencies, they told me, is typically the single hardest thing for them to get. How crazy is that? That's stupid. That's weird. I don't understand it. Like, you know, back then it was just like, you can't, I mean, it was easier to get a couch and a TV and a refrigerator than a bed for a child.
Hmm.
You know, and now I understand why these guys have a hard time, because there's no support. There's no charities. There's no services. There's no federal grant money and hardly any grants that have anything to do with providing beds for children.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's why it's so unheard of. You know, child bedlessness, the word bedlessness, it doesn't even know it's not a real word, you know, but it's a real problem. You know, it represents greater than 3% of the total population of any given town on average. So if you're in a town of 100,000 people, there are 3,000 kids sleeping on the floor right now.
That's a very powerful stat, and it's very humbling to consider, because we all have a part to play in community. And you mentioned being rooted in a small town. I live in a big, small town, but I'm from a small town. I live in Atlanta. I'm originally from Michigan. My father is from a small town in Alabama, where your last name is essentially your first name because you guys are all the same people.
sure.
But, you know, it is very striking to hear that. And again, very powerful. I think you should, if you don't already, continue to give yourself the flowers and grace to continue to do that work, because sometimes this work is fulfilling and it gives you joy, but it also can give you a lot of pain thinking about how much more needs to be done, because there's still an unmet need, even though your team is doing an amazing job at filling that gap.
Well, thank you. You know, I learned a long time ago, number one, when I realized how big child bedlessness really was, I knew back then and still today, child bedlessness is not going to be solved by some farm kid from Idaho in your town.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't. And I knew that. What I did, the only thing I could do about that is teach people the way I did it, right? And provide that platform, that opportunity for someone to start a chapter in their area, bring their community together and start building beds and delivering beds to kids, right? And because of that, you know, I found out there are millions of amazing people out there. They want to give back. They just don't know where or how, right? And that's why I talk about finding your passion and your purpose. You know, I believe true joy comes when you stop thinking about yourself and you start thinking about someone else, right? Because what happens is your problems don't go away. Of course they don't, right? You still got problems. But when you look at your problems after you do service, after you realize and help other people and stop, you know, quote, drowning in your own sorrows, if you will, you see your problems in a much different perspective. And most of the time, it's not the big hairy monster you thought it was, right?
Right.
It now shrinks and it becomes something that you can deal with, right? Or something you figured out you don't even need to deal with at all. You know, those are the things that brings happiness to people. And that comes from service. That comes from thinking outside of yourself, right? And I tell people, listen, you might not change the world, but you're going to change someone's world. And that world might just be yours. And that's totally fine. You know, that's why we're here. Help yourself so you can help others, you know? And when you're in that position, like when I was a kid and my parents got divorced when I was really young, I knew we weren't going to have much for Christmas. You know, my mom had 3 jobs and 5 kids. Come on. Nothing's going to happen for Christmas. Well, when you walk out to your mailbox and you open your mailbox and there's an envelope full of $1,500 of cash for your family to have Christmas, that's when you know there are great people in your community that they can and they will when they can. So when I can, I'm going to. You know what I'm saying? And that's why, you know, I have a saying or a montage of, you know, we're just humans helping humans. You know, and these are little humans, and they're in these conditions not because of anybody else's, not because of their choices, rather. And sometimes it's not even because of their parents' choices. You know, I can't tell you how many families we know from house fires or lost a job or a single mom grabbing a garbage bag, her kids, stuffing them as much clothes and jumping in a car and taking off. You know, that's a real reality for a lot of people. And that's a hard thing. You know, and unfortunately, beds are a luxury for these families, and they don't have to be. You know, they don't. We know how to do it, and we want everybody out there to do it. If this is something that you're interested in or feel like you want to know more, go to our website, shpbeds.org. Look me up, Luke Mickelson. Just type it, you'll find me, I promise. But go there, and you're going to find out what's going on in your own hometown. That's the first website you're going to see, not some big national webpage. You're going to see what's going on in the closest chapter to you. And we wanted that because we want you to know this is not my responsibility. Now I feel responsible, but my responsibility is not to provide beds for the kids in your community. That's what your responsibility is. I'm just telling you that there's a problem and there's a solution.
Yep.
Now, what are you going to do about it? Right. And everybody, listen, and this is important. I'm a farm kid from Idaho. I'm nobody special. I really am not. And that's important. I don't want anybody to have an excuse that, you know, oh, I saw you on a podcast or TV or heard you on a radio or you started this big thing. So that started because some dad in some podunk town of Idaho wanted to teach his kids something. And he got up off the couch. You know what? Anybody can do that. And you guys, everybody out there listening right now, you know, if you really want to help, the least you can do, and this is the ask, right? This is my ask. Just share this message. Share it with everybody you know. Do you know that child bedlessness is a problem? Have you ever heard of Sleep and Heavenly Peace? Is that something that you'd want to help if you knew a child next door was sleeping on the floor? And if you know one, go to our website, fill out an application for them. You know, we only cover 28% of the United States. So there's 70% that still don't know us that we exist. There are millions of kids right now that are sleeping on the floor. And we have the solution. We just need your help, you know?
Thank you for that. I think this is when passion meets conviction. You are able to really, you know, multiply your gifts and your purpose. So I definitely hope that other people who are listening to this, who may be in a space where they're looking to find integration between their spiritual path and their physical path, how do I make this meet and add more abundance to me with what I can do for myself and it impact others? that would be a big win for me as a host of this show, is to be able to take your message and it be a part of a way that we're continuing to inspire others. This has been really good. Can you share the website again just one more time for everyone?
SHP Beds, so Sleep in Heavenly Peace, shpbeds.org. You know, one good way to remember that, I had a friend of mine come up to me, this is many years ago, but he said, you know, Luke, it's interesting that you call it SHP. I said, why is that? And he said, you know, me and my sister, my younger sister, we grew up in a pretty rough home. You know, there was a lot of just rough stuff, as you can imagine. And he said, when it got really bad, my little sister would look at me and said, can we go to our SHP? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, that was our secret hiding place. Mm-hmm. And it was their bed. And so if that doesn't ring your heart bell, I don't know what does. SHPbeds.org is our website. That's where people can make a big change in kids' lives right in your own hometown. So please visit it.
You continue to get signs that you're in alignment. So I hope that you are happy about that, because, you know, it just keeps confirming in what you're saying. I hear confirmation. And so you don't need thank you for me. I'm just Zanetta, but thank you.
Well, hey, listen, thank you for having a podcast, for delivering great messages that are needed in our community. No one would know about it if we didn't have people that would be willing to take time out of their day like you. I know putting a podcast, I put one on, they're not necessarily easy, and you certainly don't make a lot of money from it, if you make any money at all, right? We do it because we want people to know what's going out there, and that takes a special person to do that. So thank you for having a podcast, and thank you for having me on it.
Well, thank you. You are always welcome to come on back. We're going to make sure that we get people over to the website and figure out how they can be a source of transition and hope in their own communities, because I agree, sometimes charity starts at home, and that is the best way for individuals to see the most immediate impact is, what can I do for my neighbor?
Yep. Amen.
All right, Luke, thank you so much for joining. I am Zanetta Tunique Empower. This is Unscripted, and catch you on the next episode.